This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Between the lawnmower and the leaf blower, they've basically gotten rid of rakes and brooms and dustpans and water jet hoses and all the other things that made cleanup a true cleanup job.
What's the most polluting, most energy-intensive, and noisiest way you can think of to move a featherweight piece of debris 5 feet? Perhaps having your four-year-old pick up a dried leaf, run around in circles before she takes it downhill a few feet, then runs up for another, all the while screaming at the top of her lungs? Or a far more common but equally absurd method used all over the country is pointing a diesel-powered machine at a pile of debris, spewing noxious fumes and particulate matter all over the user and the general vicinity. Today on Sea Change Radio, we're talking about leaf blowers, one of the least eco-friendly items found in the garage or tool shed of your average American. But in the past 2 decades, these debris blowers have become sort of ubiquitous, almost completely replacing their peaceful, quiet, low-carbon footprint predecessor, the rake. First, I talked to Gretchen Biggs, an environmental attorney and activist who's working to ban leaf blowers in Greenwich, Connecticut. Then I talked with Peter Kendall, a resident of a Bay Area suburb whose anti-leaf blower activism was recently featured in a full-length New Yorker article. Pour yourself a glass of iced tea, go ask your neighbor to stop blowing those leaves and dirt onto your stoop, and listen to today's show as Sea Change Radio advocates for the resurgence of the rake.
Dust in the wind. All they are is dust in the wind.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is the founder of GreenwichCalm.org. That's Greenwich, C-A-L-M.org. Environmental lawyer and activist Gretchen Biggs. Gretchen, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
It seems like landscapers have found this to be a good shortcut to make things look a little neater, and it seems like they're contractually obligated to use the leaf blower whether or not there are leaves to blow. But there's a real downside to just blowing dirt around.
Yeah, that has become my major concern as I've studied this more and more, is I don't like the noise. I don't agree with the aesthetic of people having to have their lawns and places pristine at the expense of their neighbor's sanity and all that. But the real issue I have with leaf blowers is the environmental pollution. And as a longtime environmental activist, that's really why I'm continuing to put a lot of energy and effort into this fight, which is going to be a fight in Greenwich, is that they are really, really, really toxic and really polluting, way more than anybody would think. One leaf blower being used in your yard for a half an hour is the equivalent of something like 40 cars idling in your lawn for a half an hour, you know, in terms of the hydrocarbons and the emissions that it puts out. And I can tell you that a leaf blower puts out 49 times as much particulate matter as, for example, a car, 498 times as much hydrocarbons, 26 times as much carbon monoxide as an SUV. So this is all concentrated in one place at one time, whereas a car is, you know, is traveling along emitting those things. And a leaf blower is emitting just astronomically more than a car in your yard all at one time. You know, so when three of these are going around my house, which they often are at different neighbors within earshot, within just a few houses away, I mean, I might as well sort of be sitting in the middle of a freeway. And my children are out there playing, and they're closer to the ground, and children respire more quickly, and they're more active, so they breathe more oxygen. And, you know, it's incredibly toxic for very little net benefit, if any.
Gretchen, what are some of the places that are advocating for the banning of leaf blowers?
There are about 400 towns and cities around the U.S. that have either a partial or a full-time ban. I don't know what number of those have only a partial ban, but the partial bans are always summertime. And the reason for that is, no, they're not blowing leaves in the summer. They're using leaf blowers for every other thing imaginable, not what they were intended for, which is leaves.
What kind of resistance have you met while you're trying to put forth these new bans in Greenwich?
The resistance that's organized somewhat is from the landscapers, and the only reason they're organized is because the manufacturers of leaf blowers, the most notable one is a company called Echo, put out tons of propaganda-type literature instructing landscapers how to fight grassroots movements to stop the leaf blowers, giving them answers to the things we say and the statistics we quote, you know, setting them up for a resistance, and even sending out paid lobbyists to have meetings, call them together, have a meeting, get them all revved up, put a lot of words in their mouth. So the resistance, as I say, was puzzling, and I'm only now understanding that it's very much sort of hyped up by the manufacturers of the leaf blowers who don't want to see their industry decline, which I hope it will, and it certainly, I think, is going to, but they're fighting.
Tell us a little bit about the deleterious effect of noise pollution in addition to the debris that gets blown up into the air.
The reason that most people object to leaf blowers and don't like them, and it is most people in most towns don't like them, is the noise. They have a particular narrow band frequency pitch of noise.
We all know the sound. It's like a million mosquitoes all on the march. So, and there have been some psychological studies that this kind of noise pollution really can wear on the human brain.
Oh, absolutely. No, and I've had to round up those kind of studies all in the effort to convince our town officials. But I can tell you a few things. It's just that it does make your respiration and your heart rate rise. It raises your blood pressure. It's basically just stress. And as we all know, stress is sort of the number one cause of illness. There is actually a fellow near you in Sebastopol, Shepherd Bliss, who is leading a campaign up in Sebastopol to stop leaf blowers. I don't know if they're looking at a seasonal or a full-time ban, but anyway, he is a Vietnam vet who suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome, and he talks about how the leaf blowers literally sort of send him into a frenzy because they re-evoke or reawake some of the stress that he went through in Vietnam. I mean, these things seriously drive people crazy. And I don't have PTSD. I wasn't in Vietnam, but they drive me crazy too.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is environmental lawyer and activist Gretchen Biggs, who's been working as an advocate to ban leaf blowers in her town of Greenwich, Connecticut. Gretchen, can you talk about how people are resistant to change, but can you walk us back a little bit? Whatever happened to the rake?
There was a time, of course, and there still is in many countries and many parts of the world where there are no leaf blowers, and everybody, as far as I know, survives just fine without them.
And you moved from a town, a small city, Boulder, Colorado, where there is a ban on leaf blowers.
And we have a lot of trees in Boulder, too.
What kind of solutions did people come up with to tackle the leaf problem?
Well, you use rakes for the leaves. You use brooms for the sort of debris aspect that the leaf blowers are being used for in summertime in Greenwich, because it's not about leaves. It's about sort of blowing hardscapes free of little fallen detritus from the trees, or what they call sort of, you know, the trash that comes off the vegetation. And I like to sort of say, well, but it isn't trash. It's actually just nature.
So you're taking action and going to your and trying to organize people in your town, but what would you recommend people around the country do who are similarly frustrated?
You know, I would say to people, get active, form a group, join a group, but also just tell your own landscapers, if you have them, not to use a leaf. I have somebody cut my grass. My neighbors just don't bother to tell their landscaper that. They say, well, we don't want him to use it. We don't need him to use it, but they just do it. It's as if nobody has control of their own property enough to tell their landscaper who they pay not to use a leaf blower. They cannot use it themselves if they have one. They can get rid of it. Some people own their own. They can ask people in their neighborhood to please consider not having them used. You know, there's a million things you can do. But we just want to reduce them, not eliminate them, but not use them for everything they aren't really needed for. Not use them excessively.
You had mentioned how some of the leaf blower manufacturers have put out some ways for their landscapers to try to keep using their leaf blowers and to fight effectively on a local level. Advocates such as yourself who are trying to ban leaf blowers, do you know any of the talking points that they set forth in terms of why we need leaf blowers?
Oh, of course I know the talking points. The paid lobbyist for ECHO, the second our campaign started, was all over it, sent a letter to the mayor of our town outlining all the reasons, which had been repeated verbatim in many, many other towns by this same person.
Let's hear him.
Well, the landscapers can't do their job without the leaf blowers. The leaf blower is really the landscaper's most valuable tool. You would increase the cost to the homeowners by 50% or more if we didn't use leaf blowers. They are made today much more quiet and less polluting than in the past. So, you know, the people like us who don't like them it's because we're going off the statistics of old models, and now they're really quiet and clean, which is completely, completely untrue. One of their other big points is that you can't enforce a ban, that lots of people will break it, so you can't enforce it, and it'll exhaust your police force even trying to enforce it.
It's always interesting to hear how we all of a sudden really need something that we didn't even know existed, most of us, 20, 30 years ago. Gretchen Biggs, environmental lawyer and activist, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
The fallen leaves drift by my window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. Kisses, the sunburnt hands I used to hold.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
My guest today on Sea Change Radio is the founding member of Quiet Orinda. It's an anti-leaf blower advocacy group, and he also is an institutional bond trader, Peter Kendall. Peter, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me.
First, why don't you tell us how you got involved in being an advocate against leaf blowers?
Well, it started back in 2006 when I had to take a break from my career as a bond trader and instead fight full-time a severe case of sleep apnea and other related problems that forced me to sleep in longer hours and undergo a variety of therapies and treatments. So I was one of those people who was home all day, and I got to experience firsthand the transformation of my neighborhood from what was formerly a pretty tranquil suburban place to live into a noisy industrial soundscape of leaf blowers and debris blowers and chainsaws and wood chippers and all sorts and manner of activity related to what you could loosely call gardening. So I just decided that something had to be done about the way that our community was taken over by excessive noise and pollution from debris blowers.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the air pollution effects of leaf blowers?
Well, as we learn and like to say, leaf or debris blowers, which is a more apt description because they're not just used to blow leaves, are they? They're used to clear hardscape and driveways and cars and roofs and everything of all sorts of debris and matter that's deposited on those surfaces. But leaf blowers pollute three ways. It's not just the noise pollution, but they're lightweight, small, but very powerful two-stroke engines burn a greasy mix of fuel that consists of gasoline and lubricating oil, and they expel, through their exhaust, a pretty toxic, concentrated form of exhaust pollution that's rather unique. And then finally, and probably least understood but most pernicious, is the way that leaf blowers cause settled dust in a neighborhood to be boosted and resuspended back into the breathing air that we all require to live in our neighborhoods. So it's this particulate pollution that's kind of a secondary source of pollution that leaf blowers resuspend back into the air that's the most lethal in our opinion.
Do you have any more information on health risks associated with that?
I do. This diesel engine particulate soot is one of the most worrisome to me as an asthmatic, and I think should be to all Californians. The California Air Resources Board published a report summarizing the health and environmental effects of diesel particulate exposure to Californians, and they estimate premature deaths, people dying prematurely, 3,500 per year, 250 cases of lung cancer per year, decreased lung function in children, chronic bronchitis, reduction in visibility, aggravated asthma, which is my problem, all sorts of proven causative links between exposure to diesel particulates and real disease and cost to society and in human life. So that is also available, by the way, on the quietarinda.com website, that report.
And anybody who's watched a gardener or a landscaper or municipal worker going at it with a leaf blower, that's in their steady rotation of tools that they use, although leaves obviously aren't constantly falling. So something, they're obviously using it for much more than just trying to clear leaves.
Yeah, it's become the tool of choice between, you know, the lawnmower and the leaf blower. They've basically gotten rid of rakes and brooms and dustpans and water jet hoses and all the other things that made cleanup a true cleanup job, and instead switched over to this mode where basically you can export your dust and dirt off of your property into the street, into the gutter, into the atmosphere where it blows into your neighbor's yard and house and settles again here. So that's what's most worrisome, because even though we've all witnessed the dust clouds that these things can kick up, that's the visible larger particles, and that's mostly the organic bits that rest on the ground. It includes things like pollen and mold and grass clippings and dried fecal matter from animals and even little particles of pesticides and fertilizers that attach to the grass that has been cut up and spewed out by the mower. So as worrisome as that is, we're learning that there's a more pernicious form of particulates that drift in from near and far, hundreds of miles away and from local freeways. That film of dust settles on our properties and on our cars and driveways and decks, and it stays there unless it's agitated by strong wind or perhaps a 200-mile-an-hour air jet from a leaf blower. So that's what we decided to really put under a microscope, literally, and find out more about these nanoparticles, these sub-micrometer pieces of chemical and soot and what the health effects are and what we know about it. So Quiet Arinda undertook a rather comprehensive study and talked to a lot of experts, pulled together a lot of research, and we leaned heavily on the experience of Zero Air Pollution Los Angeles, also known as Zapla.org, who won the fight to ban leaf blowers in residential areas in the entire city of Los Angeles.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is Peter Kendall, whose advocacy group, Quiet Arinda, has focused on the leaf blower, debris blower issue for the last few years. People can understand these enormous diesel engines spewing dirt, but these little backpack engines, these two-stroke engines that you refer to, they're fairly nasty in their own right. Can you tell us more about it?
The two-stroke engine on your backpack blower is very lightweight. It runs very, very fast, but it depends on large amounts of air and large amounts of fuel, and it burns it very, very quickly and incompletely. And it wasn't until very recently, i.e. a couple of years ago, that any serious reform and regulation was imposed upon these manufacturers. So what we have in California are literally millions of vintage 90s and 2000s backpack leaf blowers that use the oldest and dirtiest technology.
They don't look that well manufactured by unless you're buying the latest state-of-the-art steel or Echo, or you spend a lot of money on them. But a lot of these landscapers don't have that kind of upfront capital to get going in business.
You can buy a used one on Craigslist for $50. And what you're going to get is one that's used up and dirtier running than even a new one. So a couple of things happen. When you operate these things for 8 or 9 hours in a dust storm, which is what they're doing day in and day out, the air cleaners start to get clogged with the particles. They run richer. They expel more unburned hydrocarbons into the atmosphere as a result of running with an older engine and with a clogged air filter. A lot of people like to think of these things as cleaner burning, especially the newer ones. But from day one, once you start using them, the engines start wearing out. They don't have the tight seals that they used to, and they also clog and from poor maintenance, clog up and tend to run richer and smokier than they were when they were new. So yeah, it doesn't cost much even to buy a modern leaf blower. If you go to any power equipment store, they have models from about $300 up to about $550.
What are we looking at for the newest, greatest, most expensive model?
Well, this is the interesting thing because I actually went out and bought it. It's called the Steel BR500. So I'm the proud owner of one of those, and we got one for testing, okay? And we bought it locally and tested it. And it's rated at 65 decibels at 50 feet. And an interesting thing about sound is that the further you get away, the much more rapidly the sound pressure level drops off. That doesn't mean it becomes inaudible, because you can hear leaf blowers a quarter mile away in Orinda easily. It has nothing to do with decimals. It's that quality of sound. But they're rated at 65 decibels instead of 74. But the industry continues to repeat that they've made amends, that they've improved their product line. They're no longer guilty of these dirty, smoky, polluting, loud leaf blowers. But the fact is, when you open their product catalog and you take a look at their product line, 4 or 5 out of 6 of the blowers are much louder and much noisier and much dirtier than the one that's only 65 decibels.
So the 65 decibel one is like their green model.
It's their green model, exactly. It's almost like window dressing. In fact, when I went to my local power equipment store, hanging up on the wall were all the backpack blowers, and you could pick one that blows 200 miles an hour, 195 miles an hour, and 8 cubic feet per minute, 500 cubic feet per minute, 600 cubic feet per minute. Basically, it's all about speed and air volume going out of these things. So if you want the most macho tool, the one that'll really do the job, you reach for one of the louder and more powerful blowers. And interestingly, they're cheaper. So if you want to buy the one that's environmentally sensitive, shall we say, that's 65 decibels like the BR500, it's the premium priced model. It's over $500. So in a state like California, or in a city like Orinda, where we have no decibel limit to a leaf blower, what are you going to reach for? You're going to reach for the Steel BR500, which is $550, I think we paid for it. That's a little quieter, it's heavier, it burns more fuel, it doesn't throw air out nearly as fast, it's 175 mile an hour, and it blows it out at a much lower volume too.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. My guest is the founding member of Quiet Orinda, Peter Kendall. Peter, from hearing some of the more active communities that have enacted bans and restrictions on debris blowers, it sounds like there's been more strides in the tonier hamlets of California. My question then, I guess, is what needs to happen, and what can people who don't live in a Carmel or a Malibu do to get their community free from debris blowers?
One of the best tools that a local community has to regulate the use of these is the noise ordinance. As soon as you cross over and try to combat these things from an air pollution standpoint, you find that the authority of the local township or community doesn't extend to being able to control air pollution. That's in California, we have the California Air Resources Board, and nationally we have the EPA. So you're never going to be able to regulate these things based on the emissions or perhaps even the particulates. That's another authority. But a local community or town can attack it through the noise ordinance. And that's the way you can be successful doing it. On the quietarena.com website and on zapla.org, we've got a lot of research articles and documents and tools basically that you can use to become educated about what works and what doesn't in terms of limiting the use of these things.
So would the first step be to get noise ordinances instituted in one's town that may not exist if you don't live in a fancier part of the country?
Absolutely. Take a look at Sebastopol, California, which is up in Sonoma County, which is a combination of working class, agricultural, and a little bit of tourist. It's a community that decided to tackle the problem through a noise ordinance and clamped down with a 55 decibel property line limit on noise. Well, the average leaf blower emits at 50 feet away, well over 70 decibels, in some cases 74 decibels. And it's important to know that each increase of 10 decibels is about a 1,000-fold increase in sound pressure. So it doesn't take a few extra decibels to make a big difference in how loud something feels to you. So it's relatively easy to enact noise ordinances and hours of operation as the first step in restricting the use of these things. Even in the town where I'm from, in Orinda, we have 6 days a week where you can operate debris blowers between 8 and 6 on Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 5, and then they're not permitted on Sunday. And that was done back in 2005 to address the problem. But it really hasn't addressed the problem because, if anything, we've got about a quadrupling in activity of leaf blower, debris blower, chainsaw, locally situated wood mulching and processing into wood chips in the neighborhood. So clearly, you know, we have to take another look at it, and that's what we're advocating to do at Quiet Orinda.
I would imagine that one of the talking points is this is time saver for us, so it's going to cost everyone a lot more money if we don't use leaf blowers, and you can't ask an older landscaper to have to sweep and brush everything away when it takes a lot more of a physical toll. But now that we learn a little bit more about the physical toll that these leaf blowers create, it's maybe not seeing the forest through the trees.
Yes, and interestingly, in communities where they do enact bans, you would think, or perhaps expect, based on the claims by the leaf blower operators, that there would be widespread gardener unemployment. They would be going out of business, or landscaping prices would be going through the roof. But you take a look at Santa Barbara, Berkeley, Piedmont, any of the other communities, gardeners are still out there happily mowing lawns and raking and sweeping and brooming. Nobody's out of a job. And there are no studies that I'm aware of where it shows a significant increase in time or labor.
What would you recommend people who have had enough to do?
Well, get in touch with us at quietarinda.com. You can send us an email, and we've helped many groups launch their campaigns around the country and around the world. We'll share what works, what we've learned, and what we would have done differently. But more importantly, and in the works at Quiet Orinda, is the forming of a shell website that fledgling community groups can adopt and insert their own community name. It'll be preloaded with documents, research, videos, and all the tools necessary to mount a local campaign so that that barrier to entry, that technological presence that we all need called a website, we're going to be engineering that so that it'll be free of charge or at minimal cost to a local community group that wants to start its own campaign to restrict or ban debris blowers.
Terrific. We'll link to that. Peter Kendall, the founding member of Quiet Orinda, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It's my pleasure, Alex. Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Kansas, Eric Clapton, and Bobby Blue Bland. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Sungevity Home Solar Specialists. Go to Sungevity.com to learn more. Check out our website at SeaChangeRadio.com. That's SEA ChangeRadio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.